Hey. It's the Chaos Queen here, and you're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hey, it's Mistress Carrie, and you are listening to Studio 2009.
Oh, come on, Jerry, get to the point.
Nora, while I was in New York, I did some more research on my book about you, remember? Aren't you going to pour me one?
Buy your own.
Thank you. And I finally managed to dig up some hidden accounts on that last picture you made in Italy. That bomb you didn't lose a penny on, but the studio lost $2 million.
I'm afraid I'm just too tired to talk right now, if you don't mind.
Sure, I won't bore you with details.
There is nothing wrong with your podcast player. Do not attempt to adjust the volume. Hello and welcome back into our studio. You are now inside Studio 2009, only on the Geekcast Radio Network. I'm, of course, TFG and Mike. Joining me once again, as always, that good old detective, Dave Draper. Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm all doing all right. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. January is way too damn long, but by the time people hear this, it might be March.
Bro, the joke is I was done with January by the 1st, but like, man, I want it gone.
I posted this on Facebook about January being the longest month, and my buddy Dave McElvinny, he basically said, yeah, from December to February, we essentially have 62 days, because it's 31 and 31 between December and January. I'm like, oh my God. And obviously holidays are what holidays are and everything else. And then the holiday leftovers in January, but January just drags on.
Yeah, December usually isn't that, like, I don't know if it's global warming or what, but December usually isn't that bad. But January is, you know, usually January isn't that bad. It's when February is when the bottom falls out and it just gets miserable. And it's we pre-February'd in the middle of January. And I'm like, ugh. Can't wait for those negative temperatures again.
Yep. I will be negative 45 in February and or over whatever. I don't know. And then Valentine's. Okay? Yeah, no. Yeah, and Valentine's Day and President's Day and whatever other day. And oh, Groundhog's Day. I forgot that. Here's hoping he sees his shadow. 6 more weeks of winter. Yay. We're here to talk about Columbo. These are the Columbo files here inside Studio 2009. First up, we have Season 2, Episode 5. It is a Requiem for a Falling Star.
I believe I think I said on the last one that this was the one where the criminal got away. I got it confused with a later episode called Forgotten Lady, because they're both about faded Hollywood starlets.
Yes.
So to be fair,
absolutely.
I mean, like the minute I saw I had the wrong episode, I was like, oh God, it's that. It wasn't as bad as what happened with that Star Trek nonsense in that one episode where I couldn't remember Van Gelder and the whole craziness. Mm-hmm. Yvonne Craig, I still don't remember what happens in that episode. It's driving me crazy. Like I got them mixed up, and it's funny because going into this, this was not one of my favorite episodes. This was not one that I remembered super well. Like I was remembering it as it went along, mm-hmm. but I actually ended up really enjoying this episode. I had a lot of fun with it, and I actually ended up, as I was saying before we started recording, I went back this morning because I watched them last night. Mm-hmm. I went back and rewatched it this morning because I wanted to, as we'll get into telling the story, I wanted to catch details and see. Because part of it was when I first was watching it, I was playing on my phone and doing this and doing that. Mm-hmm. And partly because I was thrown by the whole fact that I had the episode wrong. I was looking up episodes. I was doing this. So I missed a little detail. I didn't know if I missed details. So I went back to see what I missed, and because as we get into telling the story of the episode, your perception of what you're watching is skewed.
Yeah,
they kind of like they play with the formula, which I ended up really liking.
Yeah, the formula playing in both of these, so as it's been already said, folks, in previous episodes, we record two of these at a time. The formula with both of these, Season 2, Episode 5, Requiem for a Falling Star, and Episode 6, A Stitch in Crime, both of these almost play with the formula. And I don't think in either of them he says his line. I was half expecting it in Stitch and Crime, but he doesn't say
it. There's a moment at the very end.
Yep, the very end. I was like, okay, he's leaving. Fine. That means and we'll get to that when we get, but like, I was like, ooh, he's leaving. He's leaving the guy that he knows did the crime. He goes back and he doesn't say it. And I'm like, damn it.
Well, cause I think, you know, I think one more thing is part of his artifice.
Hmm?
That's a conversation for the next episode, but I think that was a genuine aha moment on his part, which we like, interestingly, that comes up in this episode. There's mm-hmm. a moment that I don't think we've ever seen in a Columbo episode so far. I don't think we have. I mean, it's late in the episode where he figures it out. Like, he realizes. Because usually it seems like he pretty much has the right person pegged from the start.
Yeah.
He knows you did it, you're guilty. Mm-hmm. And in this moment, there is a moment where he realizes that she's the killer.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually is like, because he really likes her. She's genuinely an actress that he really likes.
Please, come on in.
Oh, yeah.
What's the matter, Lieutenant? Are you all right?
No, it's just that, you know, Miss Chandler, if anybody ever told me I'd be standing here, I mean, right face to face with you, I mean, I've been in love with you all my life.
I know. You never expected to meet a legend.
And he's really upset and saddened by it. Like, it's mm-hmm. a good moment.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This whole episode was a good episode, but again, it was more of, like we've been saying, playing with the formula of the way that the episodes have been going. And I didn't.
But is that a bad thing?
No, not necessarily.
Because, I mean, Columbo is very formulaic. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of interesting and neat that by the second season they were like, okay, we need to shake this up a little bit, and because people at home are like, okay, great, what would they? Because they're, I think, like we've been stalling, not stalling, but so the whole thing is, I don't remember everybody's names. There's an actress. She used to be big. She's kind of fallen off. She owns a chunk of the studio that she works at.
That would be Chandler. Yeah,
Chandler. And there's a guy who is. Like, he's quote, a journalist, but he's really a scummy artist, blackmailer.
Yep.
And he's trying to, like, he's shaking her down for money, and he's kind of having an affair with her assistant, her longtime assistant, who knows all the dirt. And so the episode makes you think that in the process of trying to kill him, Chandler kills her assistant by mistake. And it turns out at the end that no, she was trying to kill her assistant. And then part of it was also that the thing the assistant knows is that Chandler had killed her husband, who was the studio boss, and had him buried in the front yard. And there's this whole thing about she will never sell her bungalow, mm-hmm. which is part of the studio, even though it's prime real estate and everybody wants to pay a fortune for it because she doesn't want the body to be dug up.
Right.
And there's a moment where Columbo, I think the thing is, Columbo figures out the solution to that mystery. And that leads to the solution to the initial mystery that we see.
Yeah.
Now, the reason I watched the episode again is because everything revolves around, well, there's a lot of things everything revolves around, but a key element of the plot is that the assistant's car has a flat tire. So they swap cars, the assistant and the boyfriend slash blackmail guy.
Yep.
And that's supposed to be why she killed her by mistake. And the whole thing is, I wanted to see if they showed Chandler letting air out of that tire. And they don't exactly. And that's kind
of – Yeah, they show her getting out of her car.
Okay, but that's the thing. It's like the whole thing is the assistant is supposed to be doing errands. So she goes to meet her boyfriend slash the blackmailer guy at a bookstore. Mm-hmm. And Chandler follows in a car from the studio, from a random car from the studio lot. And she gets out of the car and walks over to the bookstore where the cars are parked. And if you're, you know, like before you know the twist, you can be forgiven for assuming that she's just kind of like checking to see if they're together, you know? Because they don't actually show you her letting the air out, but they show you her going to the cars. So if you know the twist, you know that that's when it happens, but they don't actually show you the twist. So that when so that for the rest of the episode, not the rest of it, so but a chunk of the episode, you think that she was killed by a mistake. Like you, the audience. I liked it. I think it was just honest enough, but just deceptive enough to keep you going. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like Agatha Christie is sort of known for deliberately withholding a key piece of information that would help you solve the mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a knock on Agatha Christie. whereas, you know, like, I think Sherlock Holmes usually puts everything out there, and you can kind of figure it out on your own.
Yeah.
So I like that there was just enough misdirection, because you know, and so when the twist comes, it's like, oh, she was actually trying to kill the assistant. Like, and then it was fun, and like I said, that moment where Columbo actually realizes was actually really good acting on Peter Falk's part, because we're very used to his Columbo, his shtick.
Yeah.
So it was nice to see a very human side of him, or a different side.
Yeah, the way he pulled off his oh my god, this man is it's like the role. I mean, obviously the role is his, but like, I feel like every time we watch one of these, I feel like I'm living an episode of his own life. Obviously, he was an actor, not a detective kind of thing, but still, like the way that Peter plays Columbo, and in this episode, like, and again, I will say, hopefully I can point this out to some of the people at Tubi.tv or Tubi TV or whatever the website is that I use over at Tubi TV to say, hey, please remove the beginning intro things, the little clip things, because it's not
that's part of the episode, bro.
I know it's part of the episode.
It's on the DVDs.
Yeah, I know. But when I saw the opening for this one, I was like, okay, I can already tell you just by the one quick thing, like where he says in the intro, I've been in love with you my whole life. And I'm like, who the hell is he talking to? And then we get into the episode, obviously he's talking about Nora Chandler, the actress, and everything else. And again, just everything he does as that character is one of, if not the best detective characters in all of television, period. End of sentence. No arguments.
Yeah.
I said he's
top five.
Yeah. I did not say he's end all be all. I said he's one of.
And he's, the word best, I kind of hesitate. He's definitely one of the most iconic characters in all of television history, and just not detective in television history.
Yeah. So the first thing that I noticed, and the thing I thought that was going to get her caught, was the gasoline in the beginning.
Was it gasoline or kerosene?
I think it was kerosene. Whatever. I think
it was kerosene because the cans were gasoline cans.
Yeah, no, they weren't. No, they were. Yeah, it's kerosene, gasoline. It was a flammable
liquid cans.
Yeah, yeah. So the thing is, like we mentioned in the other episode with spraying the water on the pool deck, there, I thought this was going to be the same thing because she should have gotten that liquid all over her shoes as she was moving backwards.
I noticed. When I watched it again, man, she was in that fire. And that was an actress.
Yeah.
I was like, damn.
Yeah, she was in that fire. Absolutely, she was.
It was a cool car, too. Like,
yeah.
That car was like 90%. It was like the Batmobile. It was 90% hood.
Yep, pretty much. That's right. 90% hood, 10% taillights. Or not headlights, not taillights. So, and then, oh man, is it just, did they switch Peugeot's?
I was going to ask, did you notice it looked like they sandblasted the thing?
It looks like they beat the thing to shit.
Yeah. I mean, cause usually it's kind of blue and I mean, it's raggedy enough as it is. This time it looked like they took like a sandblaster to the all the sides were all scuffed and torn up and but it even has like the irony is that he has this great line about, is this your only car? And he's like,
right, okay. Hey Lieutenant, did you ever think of getting another car?
Yeah, but I got another car.
My wife drives it. Of course, it's nothing special, just for transportation.
I know.
I love that line.
Like Colombo.
Not like the Peugeot.
Yeah, it's French.
He will say that someday. I promise you.
I know. We're gonna dance for joy, and the episode's probably gonna get a 5 from both of us just because he said it was French.
I swear, I thought he said that all the time. It's weird.
I swear he's come close.
Well, I mean, this one was come close. I mean, this one, it's basically the same thing where he's the point of saying it's French is his expression of pride in this terrible car.
Yes.
And, you know, and it's a double joke because the Peugeot is aside from the fact that it's ratty looking and old in the show, it's considered a terrible car amongst car people. Like, it's like the DeLorean from Back to the Future. Like, the joke was it's a garbage car.
Yeah.
But he's so proud of it because it's foreign, it's French.
Yeah.
It's like the one with, was the recent one with the guy with the fancy foreign car, and he takes it to the mechanic and
it's
in black. Mechanic's like, yeah, I work on foreign cars. And Columbo's like, this is a foreign car.
Yes, I think does he say it in that?
He says it's a foreign car. He doesn't say it's French.
Oh, he doesn't say it's French.
Trust me, you will know when we get
there. Yeah, I'm sure.
I will be so happy.
I'm sure we're both going to be just like.
I'll be validated. That's validation.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Another thing that I liked, which, you know, because I'm always rambling about, you know, that episode of Inside the Actor's Studio when he was asked if Columbo's wife was real.
Yep.
And in this one, he called. First of all, she's real, but she's never home.
Right.
He calls his house, and she's not there, but his brother-in-law, George, is there. And what's interesting to me, or what's more kind of, dispositive for me, is that he calls again when nobody else is around and talks to George.
Yep.
Which to me is like proof for the audience, you know, third-person perspective, that George is real.
Yeah.
Well, because you never know. George is real, but are like his 10 million children real? You know, his dozens and dozens of children that are Columbo's nieces and nephews? But that's a question that needs to be answered.
Have we established, and I'm going to ask this all the time, folks, because I never friggin' remember. Have we ever established that he's the oldest of X number of children from his, has he said yet?
I don't think he's mentioned any siblings, actual siblings. He's mentioned in-laws and nieces and nephews.
In-laws, nieces, and nephews. Okay, because I swear in one of the episodes, it might have been the one where he was talking about how he learned the trick as a kid.
I forget which trick?
He has two of those, the potato. I thought it was a bunch of bad kids. No. I thought in the potato episode he said something about I'm the oldest of blah 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 blah, but I could just be mixing that up with my own life because my dad is actually the oldest of, I think he has six brothers, had six brothers and sisters. I forget how many are. I don't know. Anyway,
but yeah, I don't remember him specifically saying that he was. I remember he said he ran with like rough kids, but I don't remember.
Right. Yeah, but he hasn't specifically said anything about other siblings other than my wife's sisters. So my nephew adjacent and in-laws and outlaws.
He's mentioned his brother-in-law, and I think he may even mention he was George before.
Yeah.
So I do want to quickly jump in here real quick because I'm sure we've already gotten like an actually there. There were the spinoff theories with Kate Mulgrew called Mrs. Columbo Fools Use Real. first of all, like that show only lasted a season and it was like not – first of all, it's not that good. Like because there was one year that A&E like added that to the roster.
Oh, no. Wait, there actually is one?
There's a TV show called Kate. It was originally called Mrs. Columbo, originally.
Okay.
But Kate Mulgrew was so young back in those days,
right?
It caused a little bit of a. She's too young to be Peter Falk's wife, so they changed the name of the show to Kate Loves a Mystery. So Kate Columbo is theoretically his wife,
okay.
The Captain Janeway.
Yeah, I remember. Kate Columbo, Kate the Detective, Kate Loves a Mystery. It had four titles, Mrs. Columbo.
I didn't know it had four. I knew it had Kate Loves a Mystery and Mrs. Columbo because the opening credits showed like a desk and there was a cigar in the ashtray, and she puts that out.
Yeah, so the Wikipedia article for it says, Mrs. Columbo, later called Kate Columbo, Kate the Detective, and then Kate Loves a Mystery. So, yeah, four titles.
I think there's more titles than episodes aired. Jesus.
Let me get down here. Yeah, pretty much. No? It had 5 in the first season and 8 in the second.
Oh, my God. It had 2 seasons.
Yes, but... And they did all... Okay, they I wanted to double-check and make sure they all actually aired, because sometimes, you know...
Yeah.
And other things will be like, oh, there was a second season, but only 1 episode aired and 7 didn't. And I'm like, oh, great. You know, folks, we might have to do that next Christmas.
No.
I am saving this document for now. I want to think she's real.
Yeah, there is an episode coming up. It's a couple seasons away. The one with Ricardo Montalban. It is like it's weird that question came up at all, because she's like Vera from Cheers, where she's doing stuff and you just never see her, but other people see her and talk about her. So it is she's real. It's weird that question came up in Inside the Actors Studio, because I do think the show establishes pretty. There's the one with Ricardo Montalban, and then there's a one of the NBC episodes is literally like, I can't remember what it's called exactly, but it's one where like the spouse of one of the people that Columbo arrested tries to kill. I think it's Rest in Peace, Mrs. Columbo. She tries to kill Mrs. Columbo. So Mrs. Columbo is real. Of course, that's an NBC episode, so I almost don't count those. But
anything Peter Falk is in, I will count.
Or maybe it's the ABC episode. The NBC's original ones. The ABC's. I have like a distinction between classic and.
Yeah. No. Absolutely.
Slightly less classic. You know, 60 years later. Kind
of. Yeah.
Just slightly 40 years old.
The one thing that shocks me is that series, he's not even a guest star.
Like, oh no,
he's not even in it, and I'm like, wait, why not? Come on, like, oh man,
I'm saving that for sweeps.
Yeah, sweeps don't exist anymore. I mean, they kind of do, but they kind of don't in this day and age. But yeah, back then, good old sweeps.
Well, that was a joke, but I think it was more that they wanted to establish the show without.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm saying
like, overshadowing the character, because remember this is a good 20 years before Captain Janeway. So this is Kate Mulgrew, probably very young. The controversy was that she was really too young, but she's young starting out, and they didn't want to, you know, all those years later they were happy to overshadow her with a what's her name in the tight skin suit, which Mulgrew was kind of understandably cheesed about. So
yeah.
What was her name? Because her husband ran for thing here in Illinois. Jerry Ryan.
Oh, yeah. Jerry Ryan. Yep. Good old 7 of 9.
7 of 9.
So, yeah, Requiem for a Falling Star.
Oh, yeah, Requiem for a Falling Star.
This, I liked it, but I don't know if I liked it enough that... I don't know. So the things that kind of, well, the one thing that bugged me about, what's her name? Nora Chandler. The one thing that bugged me about Nora is she has that same kind of, like, I like it in the other episode, but she's similar to, what's her name? That always called him lover in the other episode. Yeah, Goldie. Yeah. She's very similar to Goldie. Just in how she acts with Columbo, because she's like, that tie, come on, that, get rid of that.
Oh, no, that was kind of a fun little scene. Well, first of all, that was the scene with Edith Head.
Yes, it was. And
who was a legendary costumer in Hollywood.
Absolutely.
And was the inspiration for Edna Mode in the Incredibles.
Yep, absolutely. No. No, it's not about – yeah, it's a great scene. I'm not saying it's not a great scene. I'm just saying the way that she interacts with him in this episode, the way that she is in that scene reminds me of how Goldie was with him in the other episode, although this one luckily – that one luckily Goldie wasn't the killer. This lady was.
Well, I think it's a personality type.
Yeah. Absolutely. The one thing I noticed in this is after that part of the scene when he has the uglier tie on, I'm sorry, it was, look.
It was very 70s high fashion.
Look here.
All you need to say.
Yeah. Well, the problem with that tie, and I'm sure I'll go back and get a screenshot of it to put
in the 70s are not known. The 70s are known for fashion the way that the British are known for food. That, you know.
But you look at Columbo, specifically in this episode. He's got the tan coat. He's got his coat. He's got his, I think he has like tan slacks on. He's got a white shirt. Okay. So you got all this beige, brown, whatever. Because I don't even remember if we saw his shoes. I'm sure we did.
Ironically, they did look new.
Yeah. But my point is the blue tie that he had on breaks up all the beige, breaks up
blue
all
tie?
The
tie. I thought it was a brown. I thought it was a dark brown tie.
I don't know. It wasn't what the color was that she replaced.
It was like the replacement tie was gold with an ugly pattern. And again, I really feel like all you have to say is 70s fashion.
Yeah.
And put the mic down and walk away.
Yep. But what I noticed after that scene was when he asks her, do you mind if I use the phone? She's like, no, it's over there. He goes to the phone, picks up the receiver, because back then, folks, in the 70s, you had receivers and whatever else. And it's an old rotary phone. And reminded me of the days of when we could, like, angrily dial people. Literally, I heard as he's dialing, as he's doing the finger hole things with the numbers, I heard the sound of the phone, and I'm like, yeah, he's angry dialing the office or whoever it is. And then obviously back in those days and later in the 80s and somewhat 90s, you could still slam the phone receiver down or whatever. Oh, man, I miss those days. Because now it's just like, you have been disconnected. Goodbye. It's just a little thing I know. The other thing I noticed in this is she offers him a drink and he drinks.
That was the other reason I went back, because I missed that exact moment. So I went back and watched it, and yep, he does take a drink.
Yep.
And what's interesting is in the beginning, when the blackmailer guy is in her bungalow and she's pouring a drink, he's like, you can pour me one? She's like, you can get your own. Yeah. And then later on, when Columbo's there to arrest her, she offers him a drink, and he accepts.
He drinks, yeah. So, which I was like, it doesn't make me dislike the character overall, obviously, but it was one of those things where I was kind of hoping, even though she does pour him a drink, that he would have said, "Oh no, thank you, ma'am, I'm on duty" or something, because that's what every policeman would do, is they would refuse because.
Okay.
The good one. The good ones.
Okay.
They're supposed to.
Okay. That's what? The key phrase there.
Yeah.
Somebody's got a case of the supposed to.
Well, yeah.
It was one sip of a drink.
Yeah, no. I understand that.
But it was the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Hey, look, I don't mind if Columbo goes home to his wife and his nephew and has a drink at his own house.
Why is George at his house at 24/7? What's up with that? Does George live there?
I don't know.
Like it's not that necessarily weird that we'll just call her Kate is always out shopping, because I mean, you know, according to a spinoff, she's a reporter, so she's got stuff to do. But why is George there every time he calls? Watching TV.
George is a freeloader.
Apparently.
Yeah, George
he's hanging out the kids, but like he ain't. Yeah. He's a baby daddy, but he ain't contributing much.
Yep. God. Oh God. Oh man. I had a whole flash in my brain about Columbo, Mrs. Columbo, and George being on the Maury Povich show. Oh my God. No. Like, is your wife real? Is she not real? The verdict is. Oh God. What else about this one did you like or didn't you like?
Like I said, I liked that there was the little twist to it. I don't really have like a lot of like ties to communities and things. So the whole thing about the Shriner's ring and the dead husband being a Shriner, Like, it seemed like the stuff he was talking about was more like a Mason,
yeah,
than a Shriner. But I don't know if they're related or if they're different. I mean, I only really know about the Masons through like fiction, the Illuminati, mm-hmm. and that kind of nonsense. I don't know how much of that is real, and but it was like, I don't know, and it was a somewhat of a plot point, because at one point he needs a Mason ring, or
he needs a
Shriner's ring.
Yeah, that's, I was confused with, I was like, wait, did she hit the husband with the ring? Did she? No.
It was because the whole thing was the idea was the blackmailer guy had something else on her.
Yep.
And so what the ring was to make her think that somehow he'd gotten hold of the husband's ring and knew that the husband was buried in the yard.
Oh, okay.
So the minute she sees the ring, she goes to look where he's buried under the fountain.
Yep.
Which, by the way, is kind of a neat little thing, because that's the last shot of the episode is the fountain, which is,
as
you see in the background, they're leaving the house.
Yep, absolutely. And Columbo's deduction of, oh, you come in the house, nothing but darkness, you run immediately to the window there, to the door, to the balcony, whatever the hell it is. Yeah, towards the fountain. Like, you don't even turn any lights on or anything. I don't know anyone, when they come home, that would just, house, apartment, whatever, wherever you live, that would not turn that, like, hall light on or some sort of light. Everybody turns on a light as soon as they come home, if it's dark.
Her whole thing was she wanted to see if the thing had been dug up.
Right.
Because this guy, from her perspective, the blackmailer guy had the ring that had been buried with her husband.
Right.
Now, so what, you know, she wanted to check to see if anything had happened to the garden. Yeah. Oh, one thing I wanted to mention is so she kills the assistant, and then the whole thing is like, they think she was trying to kill they think the killer is trying to go after the blackmailer, because he blackmailed other people too.
Yep.
And then at one point, to try to like change the Columbo seems to be changing his focus. So she tries to put him back onto that whole thing. So she tries to run him down, right, run the blackmailer down. And like, is it me or does she miss by a country mile? And he just sort of ducks down. Like, it was this weird shot. And I think Columbo says that he wasn't hit.
He was. Yeah, Columbo.
That's the whole thing. Is he tells her that he'd been injured and that on his person was this ring, which is the Shriner ring that he had to get from a bartender down the street.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Interesting. And I love in that scene where he's like, "Are you a Shriner? Are you a Shriner? Is anyone here a Shriner? like my kingdom for Shriner's ring."
I know.
The bartender guy down the street. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. No, I thought this one was really good. I thought, even though I have a little bit of a whatever against the going against the grain of the formula, I liked it. Again, I was kind of timing to see how long it would take for him to show up or for that, and it didn't take too long this time. Sometimes it takes 20 minutes, sometimes it takes almost a full half hour of a 90-minute Columbo episode for him to show up, depending on. And I think the problem I have with the format, and it's nothing, I'll get over it, it's fine, but it seemed like the murder took, maybe it's the next one, a couple of these, the murder takes too long to happen. Like, I'm expecting the murder to happen within the first 15 minutes.
As a general rule, it seems like you enter a Columbo episode, what they say, in media res. Mm-hmm. Like, the killer has already made up his mind to kill the person, already has the plan put together, and really we're coming in as they're executing on the plan.
Mm-hmm.
And these episodes in particular, you know, I mean, it could have bounced another way.
Yeah.
So
could have. All right. Anything else on this one?
No, I liked it a lot more than I remember liking it. There were a lot of, and you know, again, I went back and rewatched it, which is, I think, the height of a compliment.
Yeah, absolutely. 0 to 5 with half points. What are you going to give it?
I mean, there was no dog, so 4.5. I like that they tinker with the form, because the formula is great. It's iconic. It works.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you gotta play with it from time to time. Like there's one coming up that I think is gonna blow your mind.
Oh,
That is down the road. I don't think it's down the road as far as I think it is, but it's coming. Where you're gonna be like, oh my god, this was weird. It's like, yeah.
And I'm not opposed to having a weird Columbo episode. I'm just noticing the slight overall changes that they've made here in season two to, as yeah. you said earlier, kind of spruce it up and spice it up and kind of mix things up, which is not a bad thing.
Well, imagine an episode where you don't know who the killer is.
That's true.
It's coming.
Mm-hmm.
And sure. It's weird.
Alright, I am going to give it a 4 out of 5 for this one. I take a full point off for no dog. I mean, the dog could have at least been in the car.
I enjoy this one a lot. Like, and I'm joking about the dog thing. I mean, this would have been an interesting experience with this particular episode because, like, you know, I remember watching these things, you know, back in the 90s. I enjoyed them, but there were some that I remember more strongly enjoying than others. And this one was kind of a, oh yeah. And like watching it this time, I had a lot of because we're doing it for this podcast,
mm-hmm.
and theoretically, particularly the second time, paying attention to what's going on. to be fair, I did actually go back and correct my mistake and watch it again. I enjoyed this episode more than I remember enjoying it. I but it didn't have the dog, so it's not gonna get a perfect score. can't be a perfect Columbo episode without the dog.
Yeah, no.
Oh wait. Oh,
what?
There is one.
There is one.
There is one. My favorite one does not have the dog, I don't think.
Interesting.
It's like the very last episode of the NBC series.
Awesome, awesome. All right, folks. I think that's gonna do it for us. We're gonna go to a quick ad break and hear some podcast ads and some other stuff, and we'll come back to close the show right after this.
You mind if I use your telephone? It's a local call.
Kid?
Yes?
Shut up.
Beyond the Night is the GCRN's latest review podcast. We are covering everything in the Knight Rider television universe. From the classic 80s TV series to the 1991 reunion film, Team Knight Rider, and the 2008 relaunch series as well. So join TFG and Mike and Dion the Music Man as they go in-depth in Beyond the Night, only on Geekcast Radio Network. You can find Beyond the Night in iTunes and on www.geekcastradio.com.
Kit?
Yes, Michael?
Just keep driving.
Transformers! You are receiving a transmission from the Rod Pod. Upload pending.
Stand by for soundtrack transfer.
I am Maggie.
And I am John.
And we are trapped, hurtling through space in a ship shaped like Rodimus's head.
The ship, for reasons we haven't been able to determine, contains the entire run of the IDW Transformers Phase 2 comic, which chronicle the events following the end of the war between the Autobots and Decepticons. So we figure we may as well read them all in order and report our findings to you.
Stand by. Stand by.
Upload complete. Now.
The Rod Pod.
Look for us at marriedwcomics.libsyn.com. At iTunes, at Stitcher, or wherever good podcasts can be found.
So, till all are one.
Till all are one.
Till all are one.
Hi, welcome to Up Nerd. What is Up Nerd? Up Nerd is a podcasting network of shows hosted by me, The Uneven Flow. People have told me I like to talk at them about a pretty wide range of topics, comics, games, movies, books, whatever, and now I'll be able to talk at you. Along with the weekly show will be two bi-weekly shows. First we have Fine You Pick, a show where one host picks a movie, then both hosts have to watch it. Then the next episode, the other host picks the movie. Each show will have a breakdown of why it is that movie was picked by that host, after which will be a discussion about what it is we just watched. Lastly, we have the show Top 3, Bottom 3. Similarly to Fine You Pick, one host picks a television series, and the next week, the pick alternates to the other host. Here, the episodes of the show are chosen by the top 3 episodes and the bottom 3 episodes, as rated on IMDb.com. Yes, this is probably the worst way to watch and review a television show, and yes, that's the idea. On our shows, I'll detail out how you can suggest things for us to watch, you can reach out and talk with the hosts, and maybe even appear on an episode. I hope you'll join me for this exciting new podcast adventure. I swear, we're going to make it more than 8 episodes.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk...
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Download this show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
You know, I'm sorry, Lieutenant. I have things to do.
Oh, forgive me, I understand. Sorry. Why do you keep saying he?
Hmm?
About the person who made that mistake last night.
Well, it's perfectly natural, isn't it? You say murderer, I say he. Male chauvinist, that are.
I guess you're right. You know, it's sort of like if, that was a woman who just called you on the phone, wasn't it? Because I notice when a man calls and he gets the wrong number, I just say, sorry, wrong number, something like that. Only when it's a woman, well, I guess it's just natural to be more polite. You see what I mean?
I'll try. You know, I'm terribly sorry, but I have writing to do.
We are back here inside Studio 2009, only on the Geekcast Radio Network. Any final thoughts before I run through the closing, sir?
I think I said everything I wanted to say.
Very cool, very cool. Yeah, it's getting interesting, folks, and it's going to continue to get interesting. And in the next episode, I get to put a bunch of Transformers references in because of a certain star that's in the next episode. Oh, boy, here we go. Mr.
I'm just rolling my eyes because it's like, yeah, that's what he's known for.
No, I know. Yeah, but that's what I love
known
him
for. Yeah,
like, yeah, no, I know. Oh, Uber trust nerds. Me, we're gonna have plenty of discussions about Mr. Spock. Thank you for joining us.
His name is Leonard Nimsey, sir.
Nimoy, not Nimsey.
It's okay. You've never read Star Trek Memories.
No, I haven't, unfortunately. Thank you for joining us inside Studio 2009. If you'd like to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Visit the website geekcastradio.com, where you can listen to and comment on all of our content. You can also visit shop.geekcastradio.com and buy all the merch that we have available, t-shirts and mugs and all kinds of good stuff. Send an email to feedback@geekcastradio.com. You can check us out and all the podcatching clients you choose to use. I prefer Spotify, but that's just me. I don't even know if this show's on Spotify. I forget. Oh, I'm serious. Like, we've had problems. We've had issues. Like, it's crazy. He's laughing so hard, he moved my old man walking stick. Literally, my old man walking just scratched against my desk. It moved. It's going to move again.
I prefer Stop Spotify. Are we on Spotify?
I doubt. Anyway, honestly, folks, the best place to listen to us, I know most people are mobile and have mobile phones, but geekcastradio.com. Give us all the clicks we need. You can follow us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that good stuff, at geekcastradio. For most of the network stuff, at It's Studio 2009 on Twitter. I am at TFG and Mike. Dave's not on social media.
That you can prove.
We'll get Columbo on that case. Join us next time when we will be discussing Season 2, Episode 6, A Stitch in Crime.
For Dave now. Nine.
That's right. For now, I'm TFG and Mike with
TFG Hipper.
You'll hear us back in the studio.
soon.
Thank you very much.